Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hi, and welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name is Caitlin.
My name is Jamie.
And we are recording an intro for an episode that we did live.
Pew, pew, pew.
We did a live episode for the Women in Comedy Festival.
In Boston, Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
At Improv Boston. It was so much fun. This happened in late April. We had a great time. It was our first live episode.
Yes.
Which brings us to why we're recording the intro in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Well, the audio quality turned out to be not super great. So,
which are bad. We didn't check stuff and we, you know, we're learning.
I would like to blame the patriarchy.
Yeah, I'm triggered.
Yeah.
As always, I'm triggered.
Never not triggered.
Right.
A new podcast.
A great shirt.
Yeah, so recording this little intro, we're going to do some stuff at the top, like reintroduce our guest and things like that. But yeah, we apologize for the audio quality being not super great.
Fortunately, the best audio quality that came out of it, which shout out to Caitlin for sifting through all the audio of us yelling, but our guest's audio came out pretty well. And
yes.
So most of her sage points remain intact.
Indeed.
Yes.
Also, shout out to our producer, Aristotle, for always giving us great audio quality.
We didn't know how good we had it till he was gone.
So true. It's how it always is.
But thank you to the Women in Comedy Festival for letting us do it. Thank you to Improv Boston for having us. And thank you to our guest,
yes,
Emily Ruskowski, who is a good friend of both of ours. She is a comic in Boston. She's so funny. She's been on 2 Dub Queens. She does shows all around the city. She's originally out of DC. She's a goddess. She's the best. We're
she
so happy we had
is.
Her.
She brought us the movie Dirty Dancing.
And also, I know we always say we're going to put it in the description, but we have a great picture of the three of us for this one.
Yeah.
She brought us Dirty Dancing, and she dressed as Patrick Swayze.
Yes.
She dressed in all black.
She cosplayed as Johnny Castle.
It was unbelievable.
And she came out to the stage. We like called her up to the stage. We had no idea this was happening. She came out to the stage carrying a watermelon, which is a reference to the movie.
Yeah. She was doing Baby and Johnny Castle at the same time.
Yeah.
She's that good.
She's that good.
Yeah.
We have to do a little bit more of the... I have to start with the recap. The live episode picks up when I'm like in the middle of the famous
Recap. It's so funny. Like, we sound like garbage in the recording, like, pretty universally, because we're always like, and our guests were very cool, very composed.
Yeah.
Mostly, I think I'm like 90% talked about Jerry Orbach in this episode, so you didn't miss anything.
Can confirm.
Yes. Yeah.
So, Dirty Dancing is a story about a character named Baby, played by Jennifer Grey. She and her rich family go to a rich people camp. Jerry Orbach is her father. They go to this summer camp to learn about how to dance and how to wear wigs and other things.
Yeah, wigs outside. That's a fun scene. Wigs outside. What if wigs, but like outside?
Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Sold. She's like, oh, I wanna hang out with these cool people. They seem to be dancing. So there's this
sexy working class.
The sexy poor.
Yes, the sexy poor. It doesn't exist in the real world, but it's prevalent in this camp.
Right.
The fuckable poor.
I'm glad you brought it up because it's an important thing that we do address.
We call back
the sexy poor. Yeah. Yes. So she's like, oh, who are these people who are dancing all cool and they're hot and they're poor? And because they're like the work staff, they're the teachers who teach the dance class, the wait staff, all this stuff. She's like, I want to get in with this group. And the main one, the coolest one, is
the king of the hot poors.
His name is Johnny Castle, baby. Ooh. And he has a friend named Penny. Mm-hmm. And Penny finds herself in a situation where she is pregnant and she does not want to be, because she got pregnant by this character named Robbie, who is a piece of shit.
Not sexy or poor.
Right.
Hate.
So baby's like, I want to help. I'm going to help with this. She's like, here, I'm going to get some money for you. The thing is, though, there's
the traveling abortionist. Yes. He's like a carnival guy. Yeah. He comes around. He tours nonstop. He's like Bruce Springsteen. He comes to your town every so often and it gives you an abortion. Is he good at abortions?
Nope. No.
But he's the amazing traveling abortionist.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also some very interesting context for that that we'll get into, which made me feel bad for, you know, saying what I just did, which was the traveling abortionist in a fun way. And then an audience member gave us some incredible context and now we can share it. But I also got to do the thing.
Yes.
So
right.
Yeah.
So the thing is, Johnny and his like dancing partner, Penny, have this gig mm-hmm. that they have to do on a Thursday. But oh no, that's the only day that the traveling abortionist comes to town.
Crazy plot hole.
So, right. Penny goes off and gets her traveling abortion.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, baby, they're like, well, someone suggests as a joke, like, what if you dance in her place? What if you learn these dances, baby? And she's like, well, okay.
And John Castle's like, no freaking way. I'm king poor. I don't dance with baby rich.
But then it ends up happening anyway. Cause she's like, I'm going to prove myself. And then they start training. There's a bunch of training montages. And then this is pretty much where...
Hungry as... That's... the longest training montage ever. All butts.
Mm-hmm.
So many butts.
So many butts.
Equal opportunity, though. Male, female, we're looking at a lot of butts.
Love it. Love it. Love it. A very horny movie, too.
But no depth.
No horny depth.
No. Unfortunately. Horny, not a lot of depth.
Yeah.
It's pretty surface horny.
So that's where we kind of pick up on the live episode. So we will transition into that.
Please enjoy Emily Ruskowski. You kind of dodged a bullet with all the Orbach talk, which is my new podcast. Check it out. Orbach talk. Enjoy.
Enjoy.
Then what happens? Surprise, the traveling abortion is not too good.
No.
Not too good. He messes it up. We're not told exactly how, and that's probably for the best.
But it's, like, real bad. So how they get to do the abortion is because baby went to her dad and asked for the money. And she lied to Jerry Orbach. She lied to Jerry Orbach.
That is one...
Let's just take a moment.
Have you ever seen Law and Order? You don't lie to Jerry Orbach and get away with it.
Well, yeah. So she lies to her dad about... Because he asks if it's illegal, and
she's
it
like,
is, and she tells him it's not.
Daddy?
And she gets his two... She calls him daddy the whole movie, so there's that. But
also it's Jerry Orbach, so it's like, daddy.
He's everyone's daddy. He's everyone's... America's daddy, Jerry Orbach.
He's a daddy.
So Jerry Orbach winds up paying for this abortion, and then he goes and finds out what his money was for, and he freaks out, and he, like everyone else, assumes that Johnny's the one who got... Penny pregnant.
I see why Jerry Orbach was upset. No one communicates with him. No one gives it to him straight. And if you've seen him in Law and Order, he needs you to give it to him straight. He's like, I can know when I'm wrong.
Yeah, when I'm wrong,
he's like, give it to me straight.
He bans Baby from, like, hanging out with him. So what does she do? She starts having sex with Johnny Castle.
Like, immediately. Like, that night. The timeline's also weird in this movie, because it's like, we're here at the beginning of the summer. They're training the waiters. The dance chef just got here. But also, Penny's already pregnant by Robbie. So, like, when did that happen? A whole summer passes.
I'd like to backtrack a little bit to the scene with the watermelon where Baby meets Billy, who I love. Billy is Johnny Castle's cousin. We assume his name is Billy Castle, but we don't know for sure. But Billy, who's a sweetheart and doesn't find love.
No. He doesn't deserve it because he's shorter than Johnny, according to
according to 1960s logic.
1960s logic. He is unfuckable. But
he's also a 10 like the rest of
us. He's a working class babe. Like, that's his whole camp. It's like weird looking rich people and very hot poor people.
Yeah.
Which is great. That's how I would like the whole world to be. So Billy says, like, hey, I got these watermelons. It's more articulate. Want to bring them into the basement with me where everyone's fuck dancing? And then she sees Johnny Castle and Penny dancing together very sexually. They're the best at fuck dancing, and everyone knows it. And then there's this moment where Baby asks Billy Castle, oh, aren't they together? And he's like, no, they were together when they were kids, but not anymore. Immediately cut to a shot of what looks like Patrick Swayze, like, going down on Penny while holding her 6 feet in the air. And no one is, and Baby isn't like, are you sure? Seems like there might be something there. How old is Patrick Swayze in this movie? Are we to bother that he's fucking a teenager, or is it cute?
Baby's supposed to be like 18.
Right.
Johnny's probably like 22, 23.
But he's actually 35.
But yes, correct. Yeah. He looks much older than her.
I couldn't tell how old he was supposed to be, which again, because I want to be on Jerry Orbach's side at every point in this movie. Again, I'm just like, you know what? If a man of indeterminable age, who I had already known was a gigolo, was pursuing my daughter, I too would be like, hey, maybe not, you know?
Yeah. So it all kind of culminates, right? They're fucking, everything's great, and then wallets start getting stolen,
And they suspect that it is Johnny Castle. Baby comes forward, she's like, "Oh, we were together." He gets fired again. Is it better to have stolen a wallet or had sex with a teenager? You know, again, we that age old dilemma. Like, there's no winning for him.
I know.
Really. And then at the end, Johnny comes back, and he's like, I have a speech to give.
And he gives it.
He gives that speech.
And before that, he grabs Baby, and he says the famous line from the movie, nobody puts Baby in a corner. And then he yanks her out of the corner.
Which, can we talk about what that means exactly? Is it like literally, because she's like sitting in a corner
Yeah, she's literally in a corner, and he's like, that's not okay. And no one's like, why? They're like, you're right. And he's right.
Is it a figurative corner? Is it a literal corner? What does he mean? I never understood this quote.
She seemed to be moved by it. I was openly crying. I love the scene where Baby basically says, okay, I've been fucking the beefcake, and Jerry Orbach, and she's like, but you suck too. Yeah. And then Jerry Orbach cries, and you're just like, oh, he's so raw.
The aftermath of that, though, kind of bothered me, because then, first of all, Johnny is given, like, the big climactic speech at the end. Baby isn't, even though she's the main character. You think she would have this, like, cathartic moment to be like, I'm tired of everyone putting me in the corner.
Literally and figuratively.
Interpret it as you will. She has a speech she could give. We just never hear it. She
gives
a speech to Dad.
But not, like, to everybody in a big way.
Right. And there was, I mean, and again, it's like I never want it to sound like we're cutting a movie slack when they're not doing the right thing and they're not doing right by their female characters. But this movie does take place in 1963, which sort of shifts the context a little bit the more I thought about certain scenes. Where in 1963, I mean, to me, it was kind of impressive that parents were so on board with both of their daughters going to college and, like, really making careers for themselves and doing... And, but then, on the other hand, they are actively trying to marry them off.
Right.
But I don't know. And I mean, we weren't around. I'm kidding. I'm 400 years old. But I don't know. Putting it in context of the time it was supposed to take place, even though it takes place in the 60s, it feels like a very 1987 movie. Like, all the hair and the outfits are 1987. Right. But they're like, President Kennedy, not dead yet. So you're like... Okay.
Yeah, how do they make a point of telling you President Kennedy's not dead yet so you can be like, okay, I can enjoy this now.
It was a simpler time.
It's important. Yeah. I think the female characters in this movie are great. Like, I think they're really, I think Penny is awesome. I think the main character is named after Frances Perkins, first woman in the cabinet, FDR's labor secretary. Like, that's our main character. Mm-hmm. But then again, they call her baby. Like, so there's parts that you're like, ugh.
I like that a lot of times Hollywood films will be like, oh, a character's pregnant. Well, she's only got one option, and that's to have the baby.
Right. And the way that abortion is approached in this movie is, and it's not made out to be the issue that a movie in 1963 or 87 could have made it out to be as this big, like, is it ethical to do it? Like, baby is immediately like, oh, we've got to get you money to get this abortion. And then when Penny finds out, you know, like, there's a moment of back and forth, but the only reason there's a back and forth of whether she'll do it or not is because her whole year's salary runs on one dance gig. Has nothing to do with the ethics of abortion. And I hadn't seen this movie in like 10 years, and I was surprised that it was dealt with that maturely, of like, that didn't become a focal point of it.
Well, even when her dad is criticizing what happened,
right,
he's not like, there's no big abortion is wrong speech. He's just like, you're hanging around with unsavory people, primarily the guys, because he doesn't seem to be judgmental whatsoever towards Penny, and that he helps her. He comes to check on her the next day. He cares for her in a very kind way. But he thinks these guys, like, he's like, these are unsavory people, and that's what she has the conversation when she says, you let me down too. That's sort of what she's talking about, is you taught me to help people and to care, and you judged them without knowing them. So that's where, and I like that too. Again, there wasn't this big, like, moral issue around the abortion. It was, this is their reality that Robbie has completely removed himself from, and that Penny now has to deal with. Baby's going to come and help her, and Baby senses judgment on behalf of her dad, who helped very much and saved Penny, but she's angry with him that he's looking down on people, and she's like, you taught me not to be that person. You can't be that person either.
And Jerry knows when he's wrong.
He does.
He admits it.
He says he's wrong.
But he doesn't apologize to Baby then. And only does he, the only time he, like, changes his mind about the whole thing is when, Robbie is like, oh, thanks for helping out with the Penny thing. I was the one who, it's only at that point whenever Jerry's like, oh, well, if this rich boy is telling me that what really happened, that's when I'll believe what's.
Well, that's another tricky thing, too, because it's like, it is his teenage daughter, who he seems to trust throughout the movie until he finds out that she has lied to him. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, if you're a parent and you find out your kid has lied to you about one big thing, it's hard to be like, well, but probably everything else is the truth, because teenagers are big fat liars. Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, I could see that both ways.
Yeah, I suppose.
Even when he said, who's responsible for this girl? Like, Penny's a grown woman. But I think he, in the context of when it was supposed to take place, he saw this woman who was left, because he said, you got her in trouble. Like, you left this woman to deal with this by herself. You sent her to this butcher. He's at the same time get that 1963 mentality of, like, you take care of women, and women can't really take care of themselves. But he also encourages his daughters to be more than that. Because Robbie tells him accidentally. He believes Robbie because Robbie didn't mean to tell him. Because Robbie was like, I thought you knew. Because he's like, hey, thanks for dealing with it. And he, I think in that moment, had that realization. Robbie thinks he and Dr. Houseman are the same. Robbie thinks they're in this like old boys club, like, hey, thanks for taking care of that.
Right.
And Dr. Houseman is kind of yanked out of that and is like, this guy's the piece of shit, not the guy I thought, but everybody assumed.
As far as I think that his character is doing pretty well given the era he is, we're to believe he's living in. And it's like, it's definitely not perfect. And there is, I mean, I wouldn't say that he considers men and women to be completely equal. It's pretty clear that that is not the case for him. But as far as 1963 dealing with a teenage daughter who's clearly intelligent and, you know, fucking up as any teenager would, but
I never made a mistake before.
If my mistake as a teenager had been having sex with Patrick Swayze.
And speaking to, like, There's a conflict between Swayze and Orbach, which, first of all, I'm hooked. The whole reason that problem arises is because when Jerry Orbach comes to see what's going on after Penny's traveling abortionist thing doesn't go well, but when he goes to try to patch that situation up, he asks, yeah, like, who's responsible for this girl, which is a vague question, and Patrick Swayze says me, because he's her best friend, right, and sort of views himself as the one who looks out for her. And had Patrick Swayze at any point just said, that was what I meant when I said that, we could have saved an hour of conflict between the two of them.
I think one of the themes of the movie is integrity and who has it and who doesn't. And he sees Rob, like, you very clearly see the villain is the guy with no integrity.
Who reads Ayn Rand.
Yeah, exactly. See, right? The guy with no integrity. And then the working class people that everyone's looking down on are the ones that have the integrity. Like, and part of the reason they didn't tell everybody that it's Robbie is because it's Penny's private information and she didn't want anybody to know, so they didn't tell anybody, even though it would have been so much easier. That's why when Baby is encouraging Lisa to stay away from Robbie and not have sex with him, she doesn't say he knocked somebody up, because it's Penny's business. And if Penny doesn't want anybody to know, nobody has a right to tell anybody, even if it would make everything so much easier. And that's why, like, there's this big sense of, like, right and wrong. They never wrap abortion into that and be like, abortion is wrong. So I thought that was a great... It's a movie that deals with right and wrong and morality that doesn't put that judgment on abortion, too, which I thought was really interesting.
Which would have been such an easy choice to make. And another thing about the very sexy poor that we have in this movie is that they, unlike the, you know, looking rich, with the exception of Jerry Orbach, is that the very sexy poor all have a lot of respect for each other and treat each other way more fairly than the upper echelon people do, where Patrick Swayze and Penny, and even though I'm like, what is, I get, like, there's a lot of positive male-female friendships, but he is almost eating her pussy, like, 7 different times in this movie. Yes. And he's like, but we're friends. And I was like, okay.
I like that they did that. I agree with that. You're like, but I like that they did that, that her character exists not as anyone's romantic interest.
Right.
Like, there's a female character who's not the main character who exists in these, like, she forms this bond with Baby where they're clearly women who have nothing in common at the beginning. And Baby, when Baby comes up to her and says, I envy you. And Penny had just watched Robbie hitting on Lisa. She's pregnant. She got kicked out of her house at 16. And she, like, her life is a shit show. And this doctor's daughter, rich girl, who's at a summer resort, is saying, I envy you. Like, that's where they start. And I think they come so far as to this place of, like, mutual respect for one another. And I also like that when Johnny gives his speech at the end, I don't think anybody mentions Baby's appearance in the movie, like, at all. Like, Johnny never says, like, you look beautiful. Like, when he's like, this is why I love her, he doesn't say, you're so beautiful. He's like, she has integrity, and she's smart, and she's brave, and she helps people, and she inspires me to be a better person because she's such a good person.
Right.
Oh, I wanted to talk about the scene. One of the scenes that does pass the Bechdel test is between Baby and Penny on the Thursday, which is the only day the traveling abortionist can come. And is also when Baby's about to do the one show that everyone's income depends on. Mm-hmm. They have this scene together that I thought was really nice to a certain point, where Penny is helping Baby get ready, and they're talking about dancing, and Baby's nervous, and then the scene ends with Penny saying, "I'm scared to get an abortion," mm-hmm. which apparently she should be. This traveling abortion is not very good. But before that, she says to Penny, like, "I just want you to know, I don't really sleep around, and I thought that Robbie really loved me." And that doesn't seem, like, super necessary to bring into it, because, like, it doesn't super matter, which is kind of nitpicky. But then again, that might also just speak to the relationship between these characters, where Penny probably feels like richer yeah. people judge her and assume that she would be, like, the type to sleep around, or however that's perceived.
Well, it kind of goes back to, like, the slut-shaminess that exists right, a bit right. in this movie, where it's like, "I don't want you to think I'm a slut." Opposite for me. I go out and I say, "Hey, Ron, I'm a slut."
I don't say anything. I just want people to guess. To be fair, that same weird, like, the sexy poor do have a fear of being slut-shamed across the board, because then there's that weird scene in Swayze's cabin, which is a book I would like to write. there's a scene in Swayze's cabin after he and Baby have had sex, I hope with protection, who knows. But Baby is, like, you know, teasing him, and is like, "How many women have you been with?" Because, and honestly, I'm like, "I want to know. We don't know how old you are." And, like, maybe a ballpark figure would be helpful. But Swayze starts talking about something we already know, which is that he's low-key a gigolo, but then totally disclaims that by, basically, he has this weird speech where he's like, "But you don't understand. You come here and suddenly there's all these women, and they're throwing themselves at you, and they're putting their key cards in your pockets, and you show up and you think they love you." It's like, Swayze, no you don't. You don't think someone slips their key card in your back pocket, a known married person, and is like, "Swayze, come over because I love you." Like, and so, you know, it's implied, yeah, so, you know, Swayze had sex with however many people, we don't know how old he is, but he implies that every time he's had sex is because he thought he was in love, and then he got stiffed.
In defense
of Swayze, that's the follow-up to Swayze's cabin. In his defense, because there's a moment when, also in that conversation, he's like, mm-hmm. "Oh, they're shoving diamonds in your pocket."
Yeah.
And as we learn from Titanic, you show you love someone by giving them a diamond.
Right, that's true, because Caladan Hockley
right.
was the romantic protagonist of that movie.
He's also super poor, right? So all the kids, they're super poor. When he's like, he's eating right. candy to stay alive, and he's like,
Jujubes
to stay alive. And then he goes there, and women are just giving him all this. I think anybody in that situation, like, he's super overwhelmed by, like,
sure.
my, like, during the year, I'm flat broke, can barely survive. And then all summer, it's sex and money all over the place. I think it's a weird, and I also think, I think the scene in the locker room with Penny and Baby, mm-hmm. I liked that they did that Penny, because before that, a lot of her interactions, "You don't know shit about me," and mm-hmm. like, she very quickly dismisses Baby,
right?
And then you see her vulnerability when she's like, she's ashamed of herself because people have always treated her like that. And mm-hmm. I think that's where you see who Baby really is, because Penny's expecting to be slut-shamed, and that's why she says it, because she's expecting right. Baby to judge her, and at no point is she met with judgment by Baby at all. Mm-hmm. And I think it shows you this bond is developed between these women, and Baby isn't who she thought she was.
Right.
And Baby was never going to, it wouldn't have occurred to Baby to judge her. But Penny's so used to everybody treating her like that her whole life that she feels like she has to preempt it by addressing
right.
it.
And that's like the sort of speech that she gives, that Baby gives her dad toward the end, when she's like, "There's some things about me that you may not like and you don't know about me, but if you love me, you have to love all of me." Basically saying, "I have sex now, Daddy, and you have to be okay with it."
"Sorry, Daddy."
And then Daddy cries. Real quick, can we talk about how much emphasis is placed on the Lyft and how I want to develop an app called the Lyft, similar to Lyft, but instead of picking someone up in a car, you just pick them up and lift them over your head. You like say, hey, I want that person to come pick me up, and then you get picked up.
I will absolutely give you startup money for that.
Yes, thank you.
I liked the Lyft. I mean, there were so many montages in this movie, but when they are like, we're having trouble with the Lyft, this is where I first started questioning, wait a second, how old is he? When he takes a 17-year-old into the water, and it's like, okay, we're about to see some nips. How old is this man again, lifting this high school senior? That said, very horny scene. Liked it.
Does anyone else have any final thoughts about the movie and the portrayal of women?
We established that, yes, the movie does pass the Bechdel test.
Baby has conversations with her mother, with her sister Lisa, and with Penny, all about things that aren't men. So
and
happens
with the old grifter.
And then we rate the movie on a scale of 0 to 5 nipples, based on its portrayal of women.
I would like give it 3.5 or 4.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you can't give it 5 because it was 1963, so you're never going to win there. And, you know, there are occasional Jerry moments where it's like, ah, maybe just believe baby instead of corroborating it with 3 different chodes. But, you know, eventually he does believe baby. Baby is an exceptional person throughout. Even when she is helping men, she's, you know, she makes every decision for herself. And I mean, she's the main reason this movie is awesome. And Penny, too. Penny is like an awesome female character. Wish that they had done more / literally anything with her mom. I feel like there could
Marge.
Have been.
Poor Marge.
Marge. That's Marge is sidelined hard. So and the sister's kind of a dummy. But we get to see the, you know, she comes around as well. And yeah, I'll skew up. I'll give it a 4.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't know. It bugged me that, like, the baby doesn't get her, like, big speech at the end. Like, they give that to Johnny, which maybe, I don't know, he kind of has more at stake, you could argue. I don't know. Like,
His whole salary.
That's true. But I don't know. I wish that she had more of, like, a climactic moment. She does get the Lyft, but
who cares about the fucking lip?
Oh, by the way, all 4 of my nipples, some are Jerry Orbach young, hot. Some are Jerry Orbach old, still hot.
Cool.
What I love is she doesn't give Penny the money to impress Johnny. Like, she doesn't do it to, like, get it, like, to get this guy to like her. She does it because it's what's right, and she doesn't hesitate at all. I'm going to give it 4.5, because I love, again, I think the female characters, I wish they had more time to do stuff together, but I think Penny and Baby are phenomenal characters, and I love that we got to sort of see that arc between them, and that Baby's consistent throughout in, like, who she is, and she winds up teaching even the wisest man alive, Jerry Orbach.
A thing or two.
Daddy Jerry Orbach learns a thing or two about a thing or two.
Daddy knows when he's wrong.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being here, Emily.
Yes.
So that was our live episode. Thanks to everyone who came to
watch.
Yeah,
it was so much fun.
We like did kind of a poll at the beginning. They're like, who's listened to the podcast before? And a bunch of people clap and they're like, who hasn't? And then several people clap and we're like, great, thank you for just blindly going into this. And then we're like, who has not seen Dirty Dancing before? And then several people clapped.
Some people didn't know what the podcast was or the movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, your average podcast host would be like, thank you so much for taking your risk. Me? What are you doing? Like, what? It's 1 o'clock. Go get lunch.
Yeah.
You had to pay money to be here.
Yeah.
You doofus.
I mean, I would like to
assume.
So
mean. They were very nice.
They were a great audience. I would like to assume that our podcast, they probably just read the description. And they're like, this sounds so great. I want to come to this no matter what. I don't care if I haven't seen the movie. I just want to see these women talk.
God, I want to see these women talk.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was great.
If you guys are listening, tell us why.
Well, we had one audience member who, when we announced what movie we were doing, she audibly gasped.
And she ended up being this incredible source of information.
Yes.
Which we can address now.
Yeah.
So in the live episode, where you probably heard part of it, a lot of to-do is made about the traveling abortionist. Abortion is a key plot point in this movie and is treated
very responsibly, particularly for when the movie came out in 87. And we pointed that out a number of times where Penny's having an abortion, but the issue is never the abortion. It's the timing of the abortion because of the whole traveling abortionist thing. And then this same lovely woman who gasped when we said Dirty Dancing approached us after the show and let us know. And then we researched it and found out more that that was actually done very intentionally by the creators of the movie, because in this, I mean, this came out like Reagan era, which is a very back and forth time for reproductive rights. And so it was written very intentionally.
Right.
That way, as making abortion normalized and not a big deal that needs to be harped on.
Exactly. Yeah. She mentioned that this movie was sort of written and made in a response to a series of anti-abortion protests that were happening in the 80s, because the movie takes place in 1963, which is a few years before Roe v. Wade, before abortion was made legal and more accessible. And you didn't have to have these back alley abortions from these traveling abortionists who really just mostly butchered women. Yeah, she provided a lot of context and information, so I wish we had gotten her name.
But shout out if you're listening, and we hope you're still listening, because you were so great.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Thank you for, I mean, and to all of our listeners who reach out to us and provide us with additional context. Helps us, helps you guys. It's great.
We appreciate it.
Everything works out.
It reminds me, though, of a part that I had to cut out of the live episode because the audio was just, I think, screaming. So it was very distorted.
We're very excited.
But there's a part in the movie where Newman, oh God, I forget the actor's real name, but Newman from Seinfeld, he's in the movie. Yeah, and he is promoting this class that you can take at this camp called The Psychology of the Insult Comedian.
Right.
It's like glossed over in the movie, but like I honed in on this detail. I was like, oh my God, I want to take this class. I also want to see a spinoff of Dirty Dancing called something like Dirty Comedy or something better than that. But
that movie would be starring Jeff Ross.
I just wanted to see a movie about like a young woman who goes to a camp and she's like, oh, what's this class? The psychology? But then there's a man who's like, I'm the teacher of this class, like a 40-year-old road comic, and this young woman who's like,
don't let young women anywhere near road comics. They're dirty. Stay away from them. They're like, hey, you want to open for me? I'll give you $25. You're like, no, I'm not going to get in a car with you.
Oh, there's a part that I had to cut out where I literally just screamed. I was like, why is the lift so important? The big lift. Johnny Cash has to lift baby up. Why is there so much emphasis placed on it? And I scream, fuck the lift. And I just want everyone to know how angry I am about
you were mad about lift. The lift, and I wasn't mad about the lift. Emily wasn't mad. Emily didn't yell once.
Yeah.
It was almost like she's got a control on herself that we don't. And honestly, good for her.
Good for her.
She's a smart lady, yeah.
Yeah.
And she's a social worker, too. That's probably why she didn't yell. She's
cool, calm, and collected.
She's got a degree in having her shit together.
Hey, do you know what I have a degree in?
I don't care.
Me either. But it is a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, this was our episode about Dirty Dancing.
We had so much fun. Thanks we hope we do more live episodes in the future. We'll let you know if that's the case. And we will soundcheck next time.
Yes, we sure will.
Yeah.
You can follow us on social media at Bechdelcast on Instagram.
Ever expanding.
On Twitter. We have a Facebook. You can like us there. We post articles. We post things. It's great. You can rate and listen and subscribe and review us and all of those fun things on iTunes. And? You can follow me at Caitlin Durante. I haven't plugged myself in a while.
Hey, plug it, baby.
Plug it. Plugs out.
My plugs out, hogs out. You can take your hog out and then type into your browser. Twitter.com/hamburgerphone. I'll be there. Your hog will be there. And then who knows? We'll just let nature take its course.
All right. I think that'll do it.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
The hit movie Bob Marley One Love is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life of an icon who inspired generations with his message of love, peace, and unity. Rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/One Love to try it free now.
Ladies and gentlemen.
are coming back to Atlanta. Right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.